Welcome to the Beyond the Box Score podcast. In this episode, I interview Coach Jason Martinez. He's a strength conditioning coach at North Texas.
Coach, how's it going?
Good, brother. How are you?
Doing well. Coach, you want to give yourself a brief introduction to the listeners?
Sure, man. I'll keep it just that. We'll keep it brief. Jason Martinez, right? And I'm a New York kid. Went to undergrad at Manhattan College, walked across the stage, hopped on the airplane, landed in Clemson, South Carolina, spent a couple months there in the summertime learning and growing in the strength and conditioning world. Took an opportunity at Penn State, was there for a full semester, learned a lot, grew a lot there, decided it was time to go back and get a further education, and I landed at one of my favorite places in the entire world, Lindenwood. Out in St. Charles, Missouri. I was there for 2 years, got my master's degree in human performance. During that time, I was able to take an internship in the summertime for class credit. And so I linked up with Ryan Horn and AJ Kerr at Wake Forest, did an internship there with men and women's basketball, and solidified my goals that I set for myself originally, which was getting involved with the men's basketball side of strength and conditioning, and was fortunate enough to go back, finish my master's degree that semester. And AJ took a job where you're very familiar at Wofford. And so Ryan Horn called me and asked me to come back. And, you know, I think before he even hung up the phone, I was already at his front door. So very excited about that. Got to work with amazing staff, which you've obviously have, you know, interviewed and talked to and are also very close with that Wake Forest staff with Danny Manning and Molly and JB and people who I consider family still. And, you know, unfortunately, we were let go in that COVID transition there and ended up at ECU with my main man, Joe Dooley. And so I was there working with men's basketball at ECU for 2 years. And spent the last year with Rick Pitino over at Iona. And now I currently am in the University of North Texas in Denton, absorbing all these new Texas vibes that I've heard such great things about. And for everybody who has sold me on Texas, you guys were not wrong. This is a fantastic place to be. And I'm very excited to join this new staff over here at the University of North Texas.
That's awesome. Talk about growing up in Saratoga Springs, New York.
So I'm fortunate, man. I got the best of both worlds growing up. My father resided over there in Queens, Flushing, Queens. And so, you know, I got a little taste of the busier side of life. And, you know, my mother and my sister and my nephew, they reside in Saratoga Springs, upstate New York. It's a wonderful place. Really well known for horse racing, you know, which is something obviously I've indulged in here and there, but a really unique place. And the reason why I say it's unique is because everybody there has a special niche. And, you know, I think that's really where my interest in specializing came from, because you still get a little bit of the hustle and bustle up there in upstate New York, but it's a little slower pace and people take work very seriously. And so from an early age, you know, seeing both sides of it, I got to be able to witness, you know, what it really took to kind of mold yourself into a specialist, if you will. And so I'm really fortunate for my upbringing. You know, I've had the opportunity to be in a great place where basketball specifically was a really important part of our culture, man. Like upstate New York, we produce a lot of hoopers, but like, what, believe it or not, man, we had, you know, and I'll name drop a few: Jimmer Fredette, Pat Riley is a Schenectady guy right up the road. You know, Kevin Herter is a guy playing at a high level in the NBA right now. I played against him in high school. We've just had great coaches, man, like great high school culture. We've had Coach Fruscio at Albany Academy, who's produced guys like Andre Jackson, who just won the national championship at UConn. So I grew up in the basketball side of it, man. Like, you know, people really, I don't know if they still do, but at least they used to. They used to look at New York as a basketball state. And we really solidified that upstate, man. Like, that's what we believed in. That's what we lived and we breathed. you know, football has its successes, and you know, we'll leave that for another time, but we're really a basketball town, man.
No doubt. Besides basketball, what other sports did you play growing up, and when did you get introduced to the weight room?
Well, I, you know, introduced is a loose term we'll use, because I was always dilly-dallying around the YMCA. But really getting into training, there's a wonderful strength coach upstate New York, Aiden Howley. He introduced me to actually sport-specific training. And the reason why is, let's call it what it is. You know, basketball was important to me, but I'm a 5'8 kid from upstate New York, and you know, I need to do what I had to do to compete with some of these guys, man. And so that was where I really dove into the really deep, intricate training side of sports specific training. But you know, I have no problem reflecting on this. I think the one thing that I did get caught up in at an early age is we really kind of pigeonholed ourselves into one specific sport. And I think I missed the era of you played football in the fall, basketball in the winter, baseball in the spring by a couple of years. I played baseball for a good time. It was probably my better sport. I was probably better at baseball than I was at basketball. But, you know, like your previous question, you can understand why I chose to pigeonhole myself in the basketball realm. But I really like to think that, you know, especially today, you know, I'll get phone calls from coaches and, you know, from parents, and they'll ask me like, what should my son or daughter be doing to get ahead in basketball or whatever you the sport may be. And my answer to it is continue to be a kid, man. Like, play lacrosse, play hockey, play basketball, play football, because it's a lost art. And some of the best athletes we've seen growing up are the guys who are girls now who have played football, baseball, basketball, tennis, soccer. You know, surprisingly enough, some of the best basketball athletes I've worked with played soccer growing up. Just from where they've come from, it's just been a cultural thing for them. And, you know, there's a translation there with the athleticism side of things. But that's kind of been my introduction to it. But, you know, looking back on it, reflecting on it now that you brought it up, I really think, you know, I wish I spent more time playing a bunch of different other sports.
You end up going to Manhattan College. What made you want to be a Jasper?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll let you in on the personal side of things. Growing up, I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with my father. And, you know, like I alluded to, he spent a lot of time living down in the city. And so I knew it was time for me to get out of Saratoga for no other reason than my own personal growth. And that was an opportunity to get closer to my father and build that relationship. So that was really what drove the decision making. Obviously, you know, being around that environment, I've always had a deep love for New York City and what it offers. In the environment, you know, the cool thing about New York City, and, you know, I tell this to my fiance today, like, yeah, I wouldn't mind raising kids in, you know, a New York or a Chicago, because kids still play outside, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're still kids. Like, they run around and they navigate on their own. They learn how to talk to people. And so that was an environment that I just really needed to deeply involve myself in. And so that's how I ended up being a Jasper, man.
That makes sense. Coach Masiello is the head coach in Manhattan during that time. What was your first taste of college basketball like?
So Masiello, oh, that's my guy. That's my guy, man. Stevie Mass is one of my favorite people on this planet. You know, our relationship now is different than it was when I was a little intern at Manhattan College. Because, you know, I was just sitting back and observing and still probably a little scared at the time. But funny story. So how I got my internship was I wanted it for class credit, first and foremost, because I was ready to graduate. And it was the second year that a strength and conditioning department actually existed at Manhattan College. So during my interview process, Patrick Dolan, who is one of my best friends to this very day, he gave me my first opportunity to get involved in strength and conditioning. One of his interview questions was, what's your 5-year goal? What's your 10-year goal? And, you know, I sat there and I told him, I said, I really want to work with basketball. He said, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'm positive, man. Like, one day I want to be the head strength coach of the New York Knicks. Like, every stinking New York kid out there, they want to be involved with the New York Knicks. This is what we do, because for some mystical reason, we think that if we can get the opportunity one day, maybe we can help them win a championship. But and so he said, okay, let's see what you got. And so he kind of put me on a trial and error basis and let me come in and work with some of the other teams. And, you know, eventually let me work with the basketball team. And it was some of my fondest memories because Steve Masiello is a Rick Pitino disciple, and they're great coaches and they have high culture. And so demands a lot of his coaches and players. And so that was my first introduction to that side of strength and conditioning, specifically speaking on the basketball side. And we had a lot of fun, man, because it was about being creative. It was about getting work done at a high efficient level. It was about making sure guys were at the right, you know, at the time, body fat percentage and body weight, and you know, making sure we were checking those boxes, but also being the person that they needed us to be in that time, right? And I think, you know, we'll touch probably upon that here in this podcast about being a support staff member on a basketball side of things. It's understanding what the head coach is trying to accomplish, understanding their coaching style, and understanding how we can be as complementary to that style as possible, right? And when you have a hard charging, high successful coach like a Masiello and all the other coaches that I've worked for, a lot of the times you serve as a sense of reasoning for them, right? Sitting back and letting them know that, hey, coach has got your best interest in mind. He's going to coach you hard, but he loves you. And, you know, he'll tell you that. But, you know, when you come down here all charged up after practice, like, we're going to be okay. When, you know, talk them off the ledge a little bit, like, man, coach wouldn't leave me alone today. Well, yeah, coach wants you to be a pro because you told him you wanted to be a pro when you got here. So that was my first experience with it, man. And I'm forever grateful for those guys. And Patrick Dolan and Michael Lave, who's still there to this day, they kind of helped me navigate that side of things because the basketball season on the college side is long, man. Like, we have the longest college season in college sports. You start in July, practice. Now you start in June and you go all the way, hopefully until the end of March. And there's a lot of emotions and different variables that come into play during those times. And, you know, you really learn how to be almost a therapist and a sounding board during those times, man. And, you know, that was my real first experience with the basketball side of things.
That's so true. You know, you interned with Penn State and Clemson, like you mentioned. You know, how did you get plugged in with those programs? And what were the differences you could tell between Power Five programs and programs like the MAC?
So the first thing that I really tried to do is I tried to make each step that I took career-wise, chronologically, a step to build upon the next. And so when I was at Manhattan College, we were, like I alluded to before, we were a second year, just started a strength and conditioning program, right? In my time growing up in this profession, sports science was a really big thing. And it's even bigger now than it was when I was coming up in it, right? And we rely heavily on it to this day. Unfortunately, you know, by budgetary meanings, like we just didn't have that at Manhattan College. So Patrick, being the mentor that he is to me, was like, hey, man, like, if you really want to grow in this thing, like, you got to go get this experience with some of the sports science stuff. Well, what better way to learn it than to go to the place that has it all? And that was Clemson. And so I ended up on the Olympic side of things over at Clemson and got a ton of exposure to not only great resources, but great people, man. They're just high level and high functioning individuals over there. And I speak on it very highly to this day because it's really a family atmosphere. Like when you're involved in that side of things over there, they really look out for you and you look out for them. And it's a holistic approach of of how to do things, and even on the personal side of what it really looks like to have a network. And so I was able to spend the summer over there. We got great experience with the technology and the different levels of athletes, you know. And I think my best experience at Clemson was working with track and field, because they get such highly touted recruits over there to participate in their track and field program. And so when you're working with people like that, you're working with the one percenters. And when you work with the one percenters, your programming and your method of doing things have to be very intricate to get results. Right. And it's no knock on anyone or anybody that I worked with or any programs, but some of the places I've been, like, just generic training is really beneficial for some of those athletes, right? Like, just making them a more well-rounded athlete, giving them exposures to different types of trainings and seeing how they adapt and, you know, respond to training is very beneficial for them. But when you get to a place like Clemson working with those high-level athletes, that's no longer the case. And even Penn State in a certain degree, right? Like, you're working with the top of the top. And so you have to get very diligent in what you do, because time is always of the essence, and the methods need to be specific to their specific body type, their personality, their sport requirement. And so those were some of the situations that I found myself in there as an intern, learning and developing. And, you know, Penn State gave me my first opportunity to actually program. And I got to dive in a little bit deeper into the basketball side of things over there. And so those were two of my stops that just built upon one another. And, you know, I'll forever be grateful on how it happened. And, you know, it turned out to be very strategic at the time. You know, I don't think it was necessarily strategic on my part. I had people above me looking out for me, guiding me in those directions. But I'm very grateful for the way things kind of panned out.
Yeah, you mentioned beginning of the podcast, really, you know, you walked across the stage and then got on a plane, but, you know, you graduate a bachelor's degree in exercise science from Manhattan College in 2017. What's the process like for becoming, you know, a GA, or, you know, getting a position in your field? Like, obviously people on the podcast have talked about the GA and the support staff roles for basketball. Like, you were at camps, you get to know people through that. You were a manager and you get promoted. What's it like kind of in your realm?
Well, I'll say this. It's different now than it was a couple years back, right? So first we'll allude to what it was like a couple years back. So you needed experience, because as a GA in the strength and conditioning side, you're given your own teams, which is a large responsibility, right? So you need a solid basis of information to really maximize those opportunities of getting your own teams. Now it's a little different. And I don't know why, because I still think there's a lot of people out there that are still very interested in the strength and conditioning side of things. And I don't mean to offend anybody, but I told you this, you know, in our preliminary talk before the podcast. I'll be very transparent with you, and that's just how I like to operate these days. I don't think that the young professionals coming up in this field like to work for free anymore. So before, it was like you do an internship, maybe two, you get experience, you go search for a GA, and then you use that experience to further sharpen your tools and develop your craft. And then you go ahead and you look for your full time. Now it's hard, dude, man. I can't even find interns anymore. Like these young professionals, they don't want to work for free. Now, I will say this. I understand the times have changed and it's hard working for free. But it's essential. It's essential in the growth process, because as an intern, what I really learned is that I love what I do, because it was hard, right? You worked a ton of hours, you worked them for free, you were going off of savings, if that. If not, you were doing little things on the side to earn cash here and there. You were moving all over the place. And if you didn't love it and it didn't resonate with you, it weeded you out fast. Nowadays, you're getting kids that want the instant gratification. And I say kids as a loose term, and I don't mean to say. You're getting young professionals who want the fresh out of college, right into a GA, right into their full-time job. Right. And you're missing steps, because now you're getting graduate assistants that are there for a year or two, and then they're leaving to get full-time jobs because, you know, let's call it what it is. These entry-level jobs, they're just that. They're entry-level jobs. They're 35, 40 grand for six teams in the middle of somewhere you've never heard about. And they're willing to hire underqualified people to fill a role. And so you're not getting that full development in that trajectory of what we've had to go through to get some of those spots. And so the whole landscape of the field is constantly changing. And the reason why is just because of the demand of the, you know, we're seeing a lot, and I won't speak a ton on it because it's not my realm, but you're seeing a lot with athletic training as well. Like, people are just aren't taking the jobs like they were before. So the candidate pool has shrunk tremendously. And we're seeing that on the strength and conditioning side. And I went on a little bit of a tangent, and maybe I missed the mark on your question, but it's something I'm so passionate about, because ultimately what that falls on is us as the strength and conditioning coaches that are in it right now, because we have to make it enticing for these young professionals to want to come do this stuff. And the best mentors and people that I've interned with, they've made it worth my while because they've invested in me as a person, but they've also helped me out. Like, I've had, you know, and we could go on for days with some of my stories, man. Like, dude, I didn't have a car. I went to North Carolina on foot, or South Carolina rather, on foot. You know what I mean? I've had people, you know, you need a ride? Nah, man, it's all good. Nah, I'm coming to pick you up, man. You're not walking to work at 5 a.m. Like, I've had people invest in me like that. And those are some of my closest friends. So, you know, getting to a grand scheme of things, man, it's our responsibility as these people higher up in the field to really show these young professionals that you'll get something out of it, and we'll invest in you as people, and we'll make it worth your while. And, you know, ultimately we'll help shape and form your passion for the field. Just give us a chance. But, you know, it's a large responsibility, and we have to take ownership of it.
Coach, that's an extremely insightful answer. Like, that's awesome. Really learned a lot from that one. How much influence did Coach Randall allow you to have on the intensity of practices and minute restrictions, stuff like that, when you guys were at LU?
So I got really close with him. You know, I leaned heavily. I started by really being an assistant with the men's side, and I was heavily involved in the women's side. Coach Randall is a really great person, and he's someone that I like to keep close contact with. But he was somebody who really believed in what we were doing in the weight room, right? And I'm so grateful for the opportunity I got at Wake Forest and see what Ryan Horn was doing there, and, you know, being his assistant as well, because Coach Manning was someone who relied extremely heavy on that. And when we talk about practice planning, and we talked about minute restrictions and return to play, you know, that was the guy who really showed me the way. And that's all kudos to Ryan Horn, because he built that credibility up to where it was a seamless investment on both sides, right? Like, there was no, okay, Horn and Jason are strength and conditioning and we're basketball. It was a full holistic staff approach. And, you know, that's where I really got to dive into some of that stuff, because there was a clear understanding on what we were trying to accomplish. And there was also an extreme ownership aspect to it, to where everybody, including athletic training and GC and Rich, and we were all involved on trying to get the job done at the highest level. And I used some of that to translate into ECU, where we didn't even have a lot of that, you know, the tracking and data analytics, but just from an eyeball standpoint of sitting down and having conversations about how we can get guys in and involved in the highest manner. And, you know, where are we missing the mark on certain things? And, you know, how can we divvy up some of these practice times and minute restrictions, as you call it? Or maybe it's an implementation of more practice, right? Individual sessions, because, you know, so-and-so is not getting the reps they need at practice, and, you know, we might need them down the stretch. And those are some of the experiences that I was able to have on the assistant side of things that really showed me how to handle it on the head side of it, to where you could sit down with the coach and be like, hey, like, you know, we're pretty shallow in this position here. And, you know, I've noticed that, you know, we'll leave names out of it, but I've noticed that so-and-so has been, you know, missing reps in practice here. And it's because, you know, we've got to get our main guys sharp and ready to go. But, you know, we might have to throw an individual session in there somewhere. We might have to get him, you know, with an extra lift with me, or, you know, we have to find a way to supplement some of the stuff he's missing in practice to make sure that when his number's called, he's ready to go. And so those were some of the experiences I had with that. And, you know, now we talk about, you know, what our role is and it being a supportive role. And that's how you support it, man. Like, you have to understand the vision. You have to understand the destination, and you have to understand your role in that process of getting there. And that just simply is observant most of the time. But when it's time to be called upon to give observation and interjection, you have to be ready to do so, and do so in a way that's digestible in a timely fashion, because you might only get that chance once. And if you don't capitalize on that chance, you might not be called on again. And so those are some of the things that, you know, I've really seen success with in the past, is just being patient, not being quick to interject, understanding that you are the supportive role, and being always prepared, because you never know, just like these guys and girls, like, when your number's called, like, you better be ready, because you never know when that time is.
That's so true, Coach. Coach, might be a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway. You guys played 7 ranked teams, including 2 number one ranked teams that second season, Lindenwood. From a strength conditioning standpoint, do you approach those games any differently than other games on the schedule?
You like to say no, but the reason is, and the truth of it is, that you really do. And I think from a training standpoint, you really have to dive into some of those scheduling opponents as such, right? Like, you always sit back and you like to look at it as like, okay, these are the games that we should win. These are the games that we have, and nobody likes to admit it, but let's talk about it, no chance of winning. And these are the games that are the most impactful, right? And you kind of use those games as indicators on how to divvy up your training, right? There's certain times to push, and those times will be the games that you should win, right? Because whether you're the better talented team, you just play a system that matches up better against their system, whatever the case may be, those are the games you push a little harder in the weight room. And then the games that you're like, maybe not so much this time, but you know, we'll give it our best shot. Maybe you pull down a little bit and give the guys the best chance. So you pull down what we're doing a little bit in the weight room. And then on top of that, you know, the games, the must wins, those are your peaking games, and you treat the training as such, making sure that you're doing what's necessary for you to be able to perform at your highest level during those games. Now, that sounds good, doesn't it? In theory, right? But, you know, like I, like, just like you are, like I am, and everybody else we're involved in, we believe we should win every game, and we're as competitive as can be. So the real answer is absolutely not, right? Like, you look at those games, and those games are just as important as the game prior to it, and just as important the game after it. It's a continuous effort to make sure that the guys or girls, whatever you're involved in, for me it was the guys, are ready to prepare and ready to invest what they have at their capabilities at that moment in time to the highest level. And what you find is, like, you just want to make them feel good, man. Like, performance markers are important, and you want to make sure you withhold those performance markers, but there's no better performance enhancement than feeling good. Right. And so when you look at training, you ask yourself, okay, well, what does that look like? Well, you just reverse engineer it. All right. Well, what can inhibit us from being at our highest level of readiness, if you will? And readiness is a sexy term people like to throw around. But all I like to look at it as is, what is readiness? Well, readiness is your ability to be able to get out there and play at your best. Right. From my standpoint, soreness is a big one. Obviously, you don't want to implement anything that's new, because something new, a new exercise selection or a new movement pattern, a new stimulus is going to cause soreness because it's different. The body doesn't know what it's going through. And, you know, we don't adapt to perform. We adapt to protect ourselves. Right. And so when it adapts to protect itself, there's a certain process it goes through. And sometimes the byproduct of that process is soreness. Well, we want to avoid that. So on those bigger games, you want to avoid prior to that game, implementing something that the guys aren't used to or haven't been exposed to already. Right. The second thing is, well, what do we see as the common denominators, or what are some things that bother the athlete during the season? Well, we're basketball players: knees, ankles, hips, lower back. Okay, so maybe we pull back some volume in the posterior chain. Maybe we add some iso holds to alleviate some pain and increase blood flow through those sections. And maybe we add a little bit of ankle mobility and deep ranges of motion on our movement patterns just to ensure that the guys are able to feel good in all the ranges and planes of motion. So long-winded answer, no, you don't prepare any differently. Yes, you take into consideration some of the factors that come into play, meaning – well, you could probably relate to this, and you've seen it just as much and as many times as I have. Like, coaches, they get a little bit like this. And, you know, you said, like, they probably won't see what I'm doing here, but you know what I'm doing. I'm closing my two fingers really tight, and you can, you know, use your imagination for what I mean by that. But on big games, coaches get a little bit, they get a little tight, and they like to ride the guys a little bit extra hard, and they like to – spend a little bit more time on sections and avenues that they think they're going to give us the competitive advantage. And so, you know, we play the devil's advocate there, and we make sure that we pick up the pieces when that occurs.
Oh, that all makes sense. You know, after earning your master's degree, you go on to Wake Forest. You talked about your connection with Coach Horn. You know, work closely with Ryan as far as like the new facility design and the equipment selection at Wake Forest. How did you feel playing such a vital role in designing a facility that would allow student athletes to help make their professional dreams a reality?
Well, I was very fortunate to come into a situation where I was involved in some of those decision makings, but I also, and, you know, this is for a lot of young strength coaches who may be in a similar position. And, you know, this is a general concept, but related back to your question, I was in a position to be able to sit back and watch decision-making happen without being directly responsible for the impact of that decision-making. And that's a huge growth process because you can learn, right? Now, when you're sitting in the big seat and you're the one actually, you know, writing the checks and getting some of this exercise equipment and, you know, designing some of these facilities, well, you're directly responsible for that decision making. As an assistant in the role that I was in at that time, I got to sit back and watch that process happen without the strenuous feeling of, what if it doesn't work? What if it's not the right decision? What if we're not getting the right stuff? Now, you know, I was teamed up with the absolute wizard of it all, Ryan Horn, and, you know, he knocked it out of the park. But, you know, I've used some of that in my experiences going further with facility design and exercise equipment selection and building space and maximizing space rather, right? Like, you talk about a place like Iona, like, you don't build space, you maximize it. Because in a place like New Rochelle or New York, like, you just don't have space to build, right? And so you learn how to maximize it and you know, what is the most functional use of the space. You really understand what that importance is. And from a recruiting standpoint, it sells itself, yes. But it's also, you talked about it, like the student-athlete experience. It's huge. It's extremely important, right? And these kids realize it when they come in somewhere. They see the facilities. They see how well it's kept. They see the cleanliness of it, or lack thereof, if you will, sometimes, right? Like, they see the open space, and they see, but more importantly, and, you know, we'll really end this question on this. They see the vision, right? The space has to emphasize the vision, right? And it's It's as simple as, you know, at Wake Forest, we put a basketball hoop in the weight room. And people are like, oh, that's interesting. Why? Why do you have a goal in the weight room? Well, it's a constant reminder why you're doing what you're doing in here, right? Like, you're going to do things you're uncomfortable doing. You're going to do things that you don't think relate. But this is a perfect example to turn around from what you're doing and look at the basketball goal and see as a constant reminder, like, this is what you're doing it for. This is the hard work, the early mornings, the nutrition, the weigh-ins, the all the monotonous things you think don't matter. Well, look, right up there, that's what matters, right? And it's something so simple and so impactful as that I would have never realized and known how powerful it could be if I wasn't around the right people at the right time.
No, that definitely makes sense. Listeners have heard about how members of that Wake Forest coaching staff found out about them going in a different direction, from Coach Manning. As a support staffer, had you been planning on staying in Winston-Salem for a while, or had you been putting feelers out there during the season, not just because of the rumors, but wanting to get closer to home or just advance your career?
So my position was unique because being the assistant to the head guy, there's a timetable on it, right? So I've alluded to a lot of the time, you know, as we spoke about all the opportunities I've had to learn, being in that position, but that's only good to a certain point. Like it only matters the education you get in the relationships you build. And the lessons you learn how to navigate around staff and some other support members and building programs and building relationships and building, you know, facilities. All that is good information to have, but it only really matters when it's time to put the rubber to the road, right? And so I wouldn't say it was necessarily my time to leave. I would have liked to stay there for another year and just continue to soak up all that knowledge, but it's not a long-term position to be in if you're with the right people, right? Because the right people will tell you, like, it's your time to leave the nest and fly on your own, right? Like, whether that means you fall to the ground and fail or not, but it's your time to learn what really works and to build your own identity in this thing. So I was sad the way it happened, you know, and I'll leave my exact feelings out of it because like I told you before, that's my family, and you know, so we family protects family. So, but I would have liked to stay another year. Was it the exact timetable I wanted it to be? No. Was it the exact timetable it needed to be from my own personal standpoint? Yes, because I'm a firm believer, and you know, I think everything happens for a reason, and we end up right where we need to be when we need to be there, and that's exactly what happened, man.
That's a good point. Mentioning landed a job at East Carolina under Joe Dooley. Obviously connections with the Wake Forest staff as far as being a coach at Kansas for a decade. I'll
Man,
be
that tree
honest.
runs deep, doesn't it? Kansas
Exactly.
tree, that Kansas tree is everywhere.
Exactly. And I'll be honest, I've only met Coach Dooley a couple times, and he always seemed very high strung and intense. Did he ever let loose and crack a smile in the offices or during practices?
Yes, man. Coach Dooley. I wish people knew Coach Dooley like we know Coach Dooley, and the people who work with Coach Dooley knows Coach Dooley because that is my guy. Like, people don't understand the amazing person that he is. I'll tell you what, there is nobody else out there who is just as genuine as a person as him. And the best part about Coach Dooley is he knows who he is. Like, he knows that he's a little quirky at times, right? He knows he could be, for lack of a better term, intense at times, right? But that guy, there's no one else who cares like that guy cares, man. Like, he's gonna be the first guy to yell at you and then come over to you and crack a laugh with you because, you know, he just got on you because you turned the ball over. And point guard, good point guards don't turn the ball over, right? I've heard a thousand freaking times, right? But he's gonna come over to you and tell you like a joke and make you laugh, and you know, the guys crack up, like, yo, he effing crazy, man. Yeah, he crazy, but like that's our guy. You know what I mean? So Joe Dewey is one of my favorite human beings on the face of the planet. He's invited me over to his dinner or to his house for dinner on Thanksgiving because he knew I didn't have anybody down there. He's the kind of guy to take you out to get a drink because he wants to check in on you, and he knows, you know, your mom's sick or your dad's been going through something. That's just who he is as a person, man. And, you know, I would work for him for 1,000 years if I could, because that's just how much I love him as a person. And so I wish people knew him like I knew him. And everybody that does know him would probably echo that same thing. He's just that high level of the human being.
No, that's great to hear. I love it. What's your best Coach DeMayo story?
DeMayo? Oh, man. Oh, he is also a great person, man. That's another guy that, you know, I really think highly of. So Coach DeMayo, one of my favorite stories about Coach DeMayo is he was navigating coming into a situation at a difficult time. He came there, I think it was like September, so he had missed some of the summer stuff, and you know, he just got the job over at ECU, and I commend him because he was able to take the brunt of not knowing what the heck was going on. And you know, as a basketball coach, right? Like sometimes, like when the head coach is trying to get something done and you're just trying to figure out and get your footing and your identity on the staff and on the court, he was able to navigate some unique, and you know, we talked about Joe Dooley. He's very creative in his way he critiques. He was able to navigate some of those unique criticisms during our time at ECU, and him and I were able to sit down and, you know, have a drink and laugh about them. And I'll save you the exact details of some of those stories, but some of my fondest memories of Steve are behind closed doors, if you will.
I like it. In your experience, do strength conditioning coaches and athletic performance coaches interact much pre and post game with the opposing coaches?
Yeah, it's tradition. It's tradition. It's like the unsaid rule, the unwritten rule. Like as a strength coach, you talk to the other strength coach at half court, you shoot your stuff and you wish each other luck and you go about your ways. But the strength and conditioning world on the basketball side is very small. It's very small. We all know of each other. If we don't know each other personally, we know of each other. And so that's our little time to connect and have a break from the madness, if you will, and be able to, you know, share a couple stories, talk about the guys, talk about the coaches, talk about our seasons. And it's one of my favorite aspects of the job that we do, is the connection we build through, whether it's pregame, whether it's postgame, whether it's, you know, I've built great relationships with other strength coaches by just, hey man, I'm in town. Like, you know, the guys are in bed. Like we put the kids to sleep. Like what you got going on? It's like, all right, man. Well, hey man, I know a little spot up the road. I'm calling Scoot. You'll be all right. And drop you back off at the hotel a little bit later. But you know, I commend my fellow strength and conditioning coaches, not just in the basketball world, but just in general for being open to having some of those communication and, you know, those relationships to really be able to do some of that stuff. But that's why I love this thing, man. The basketball world is so small and connected. I mean, shoot, me and you, right, is a perfect example. We're connected, but we're not connected, right? Like we haven't really crossed paths, but we know each other and we know each other pretty well. And that's how close knit this basketball thing is. And it gets even closer knit when you talk about strength coaches, man. It's a phenomenal opportunity if you use it the right way.
So true, Coach. That is so true. You know, I know you've assisted with other sports. You had women's tennis and swimming and diving teams. Mm-hmm. How different was the way that you worked with those student athletes as opposed to men and or women's basketball?
Well, they all love to train, right? And I think that's the best part about it is, you know, some of these teams they get a bad rep because people think like, oh, like women's tennis doesn't love to train. No, they love to train. Like swim and dive, they love to train. I always call them my palate cleanser, respectfully, because On the basketball side, you're at practice, you have lift, you're at individuals, you're on team meals, you're out on the road, you're with these guys nonstop. And when you get a different perspective and a different feel of a different culture during the season and even in the off season, it's so refreshing, and it helps you grow as a person. It helps you grow as a coach. And those are some of my fondest memories, as well as working with some of those teams, because different teams have different needs. And, you know, some of the stuff that I did with my women, my women's tennis teams, or the swim and dive teams, or the men's volleyball teams, like, I've used those athletes as lessons to carry over to the basketball sides of things, man. Like, I think we're all guilty of it. We get so wrapped up with being involved in practice and being involved in the basketball side of things that we've seen our training sort of mimic some of the basketball necessities or movements, if you will. And when you start working with different sports, they remind you of some of the stuff that you might have left out or forgot about to include in some of your other training programs for the basketball side. And it's a refresher, right? And on top of it, like, I've worked with men's basketball now for 5 years at this point. With all due respect, and hopefully I'm speaking politically correct, when you work with a female athlete, they're just different. They're just different. Like, they operate differently. They the first thing they say to you when they come in the door, and this is no disrespect to my men's basketball teams that I worked with, because I've worked with a lot of great guys who genuinely care as well. But the first question they ask you is, "Hey, coach, how you doing today? Oh, I know your favorite coffee is caramel latte." And yeah, I just exposed myself. My favorite coffee is the caramel latte. All right. It is what it is. Doesn't make me any less of a strength coach. I like to drink the creamy milkshake stuff, whatever. But here, I know this is your favorite coffee. Like, I got you one on my way in. Like, it's just refreshing. You know what I mean? Like, they're different. They're different in a good way. So those are some of the lessons that I've learned by working with them. But also, like, it's cool to sit back and, well, you ever watch a tennis practice? Yeah, right. Like, it's different, right? Like, first and foremost, you're outside. How often do we spend time outside? Like, absolutely never, right? Like, you ever been to a swim practice? Like, that's different stuff, man. Like, you have a deeper appreciation of just the athleticism besides what they exhibit in the weight room because of what they're able to do on their playing surface. That it's just, I'm a strength coach. I'm a nerd at heart. I have a deep appreciation for athleticism and beauty and movement. And it's just really cool for me to sit back and watch them excel at their sport too.
Completely get that. Do you feel like student athletes have a different relationship with you than other coaches who are the ones deciding playing time and drawing up plays for them?
Yeah, I do, if we're speaking freely, because they feel comfortable coming to you for certain things that they don't feel comfortable going to staff members at time. Not saying that, you know, if it's a situation where they need to be telling a staff member, like, we encourage them to do so, but let's call what it is. Like, the weight room is the ultimate equalizer, right? I don't hand out playing time. I don't care if you were a five-star recruit. You weren't my recruit. You're our recruit, right? Like, we've both been a bar staffs that have dealt with that. Like, hey, so-and-so, you know, they're always interjecting for so-and-so because they brought so-and-so here and they feel like they should be playing. And that's part of what they do. It's part of the culture. We know it. We're not going to shy away from it. Right. Well, that doesn't exist with me. Like, I'm everybody's guy. You know what I mean? Like, and so they feel comfortable. And, you know, I like to think that, you know, we've built a culture in the past to where they can come in and be unapologetically and extremely comfortable being themselves, because we're not evaluating them on anything other than what they're able to do at that current moment in time, right? And, you know, the work has a perfect bridge for the relationship in which we built. Like, it's not extremely sexy at times, the training, right? And you know, now we've done a better job of it, where basketball and strength training, the culture is synonymous, but it hasn't always been that way. And so now we're at a position where we have to build a relationship before they really dive into it. And you know, I get this question a lot, right? And the question is about culture. Well, how do you build a culture in the weight room? I don't know. I've never built a culture. I've never spent time thinking about how to build a culture. The culture comes from the results, right? The culture is manifested through the investment, or rather the internal return on investment that these student athletes are getting through the work. And it's result driven. So if they feel better, they look better, they perform better, well, that's going to drive a pretty high intent in a hierarchy, if you will, on their list of things that they value, because it's helping them, right? And if it helps them, they invest in it. But they don't just invest their time, they invest themselves. And it's a really volatile place to be in, because you want to make sure that you make them feel comfortable doing that. But also you have your end of the bargain to hold up. Like, you want to make sure that if they're bringing their personal problems or their professional problems or whatever the case may be, that you're not necessarily telling them like, yeah, come to me to complain about coach. No, you're not doing that. You're not being a sounding board for them to come in and complain. But what you're telling them is like, I hear you, I understand your perspective, but let's understand what we can do to just navigate what you can control, right? And I think at the end of the day, they appreciate that, because they don't necessarily want you to condole them and baby them and say, yeah, coach should be playing you more. Coach, you know, you should be getting these minutes, or, you know, you should be getting more looks in the offense, or, yeah, he should be drawing plays up. No, like, let's just work, man. Like, this won't be the first time you're going to run into a conflict with a coach. So let's talk about how to properly navigate that. Maybe you should have a conversation, right? Maybe we can talk about that. Like, let's talk about, everybody wants to be treated like a grown man. Well, hey, let's talk about being a grown man. Grown men talk to one another. We handle conflicts through conversation, and we understand where our role is and things. We navigate certain situations like that. But ultimately, that just reinforces the relationship where they know you're there for them. Right. And a wise man always told me this, like, athletes will always athlete. Hoopers will always hoop. But who are we going to coach without athletes? Right. We can't do what we love to do without them. So we are always that position to be the light and to shine, to say, hey, man, like, this is about you. And that drives relationships, man. So you'll always get that level of comfortability to where they feel like they can come in and talk to you about certain things. And, you know, the only thing we want to make sure we do in those instances and times is just continue to drive home the idea of family, and that we're really in this together, and that we are a cohesive unit. So although you feel comfortable talking to me, I'm here for you, and I love you, and just know that everybody else around you loves you too. And that's how we make sure that this ship is headed in the right direction. We never want to be someone to further drive divide.
I like that. Yeah, you're hired at Iona, where you'd work under Rick Pitino. I know Steve Masiello was on staff as well, you know, being a connection for you. What was your first interaction like with Coach Pitino?
So when I was hired, and the thing I respect most about Coach Pitino is he's very direct and explicit with his expectations. And for me, that was very beneficial, because a lot of coaches will give you a lot of autonomy right off the bat. Like, hey, man, I trust you're going to do what you got to do to get these guys ready to play. Great. It takes a certain type of strength coach to work under those environments. And, you know, a lot of us, I would say 99.99% of us, take that and we run with it in the right direction. But with Coach Pitino, the thing I appreciated, there was never a guessing game, right? It was, hey, this is what the heck we got to do. This is what so-and-so needs to be at. This is what we expect out of him. This is what we need out of him. Go ahead and do it, right? And I really enjoyed that. It was an opportunity for me to really be objectively driven towards a goal. And it was really beneficial for me in that transition, because when I got there, it was late. We were right before we started, and it was there. He totally eliminated the observation period. Like, hey man, you ain't got to watch practice to know what we got to do. This is what you got to do. Go do it. And he's the first guy to give you praise when you do. So that was my first experience with Coach Pitino.
What was the earliest you guys practiced at Iona? I know he's a early riser as opposed to myself. And you talk about culture and, you know, expectations, but how demanding is he as far as having standards and demanding excellence?
It's built in the fabric of the daily schedule. And I had no problem telling the recruits this too, when they would say, all right, you know, we strength and conditioning coaches, we give her a little spiel, but you know, I let them know right off the bat, like, if you don't love basketball, you will not make it here, because this is a full day, full time obligation. You have individuals in the morning. After your individual group, you come see me, you lift. After your lift group, you have film, then you go to class, then you come back for practice, then we have film, then I feed you your meals, and then you go to bed and you wake up and you do it all over again. And the excellence in which he demands out of you is nothing short than what you told him you wanted out of yourself. Right? Because that's another thing that I love about Coach Pitino, is he's very upfront with you too, man. Like, we on a Zoom call and he's like, hey, this is what it is. If you want to be a pro, or if you want to reach your potential, this is what it's going to take. Do you have it in you? Because when you sign on that line and you get here, I don't want to hear like, I didn't know this is what it was going to be like. Like, you knew right off the rip what it was going to be like. And you are the one who told me that you wanted to reach your potential. So here's the time to put the rubber to the road. Like, let's see what you're really about. And so what we did and what he does and what he excels in is he really makes you live up to what you told him you wanted to do, because he's always down to work, and everybody he hires is always down for the grind, or else you wouldn't be there. Right? Like, you know, and he's the same way with the staff. Like, yo, listen, man, like, this is what we going to do. Are you ready to do what we have to do or not? Like, and you sign up for it and you withhold your end of the bargain. And so it's built in the fabrication of what we do every day. And so it never felt like it was anything out of the ordinary, because when you sign up for it, you know what you're getting yourself into. You know what I mean? Like, the early mornings were not quote unquote early mornings. They were just mornings. And the late nights were not late nights. They were just nights. Like, this is just what we did. Right. And so he's excellent at really getting the most out of not only just the players, but out of his staff.
That's awesome. You know, team goes 27-8, having a MAC regular season and tournament championship included. Aside from the Hall of Fame coaching, talented players, great strength and conditioning coach, what do you credit the success to?
The guys, 110%, man. Like, I've never seen a team more connected. Like, I've witnessed guys actually love each other. Like, they cared about one another. They were supportive for one another. Like, when I got on them, they were picking each other up. When Coach got on them, they were picking each other up. Like, they genuinely wanted to see each other succeed. And it was so special to be around. And I tell these guys all the time, like, it's funny because they always joke and, you know, they bust my chops about it. They're like, yo, Coach, you mad emotional, man. Like, nah, bro, like, I'm telling you, like, I'm proud of you guys, man. Because, like, you might not realize it right now, but, like, what you guys have built, you guys, not us, what you guys as a team have built is special, man, because I haven't seen anything like it before. Like, no egos, no hidden agendas. No, so-and-so's hanging out with so-and-so and this clique is over here and these guys do this. Like, it was just cohesive. They loved each other, man. And that's the success. Like, nothing I do from a strength and conditioning standpoint or nothing Coach would do, draw up in the huddle, like, none of that matters if they don't believe in one another. And I've never seen it at such a high level than I saw this year with that group of guys.
You got your first taste of March Madness playing UConn in Albany, New York. Obviously, it sucks to lose. But what was the experience like, and does it sting any less after UConn wins the Natty?
No. Losing sucks, man. Especially coming off the answer I just gave you. Like, I had such high expectations, and not saying that they didn't live up to my expectations, but I had such a deep confidence in these young men that we could make such a great run that, of course, it's disappointing. And you know the result of that. Like, they believed in it too. So, you know, there's tears, there's frustration, there's anger in the locker room afterwards. And it's never easy. If you truly believe that you guys are made of what you say you're made of, like, it's never easy losing. I don't care who you're up against, right? Like, everybody's like, oh yeah, you played the national championships great. And it's like, okay, that sounds good, but like, they won and we didn't. Go 3 years down the road, like, you're gonna remember who played UConn in the first round? Like, no, like, we had high expectations, like, and we worked pretty damn hard for those wins, right? Like, and so it's never easy, but it was a special experience. I'll never take that away from what it is, because, you know, I know great people that have never been to a tournament, and they've been in this thing a lot longer than I have. And so it's a special opportunity nonetheless. Do you hope it goes better than it did? Yes, of course. But I'll never say that it wasn't something extremely special for me, for everybody else involved, because the NCAA tournament is second to none. It's an environment that you dream about as a kid, and it's only better in person.
As a strength conditioning coach, and you touched on it a little bit, you know, depending on the coach, which meetings do you typically participate in, and which ones do you not attend, as far as like the basketball staff?
Well, I always participate in the ones that I'm asked to be at. I like to be at the ones that I can be at. We wear a lot of different hats, so, you know, sometimes that's running different lift groups during times where they're meeting. Sometimes it's making sure the nutrition stuff is stocked, and, you know, having your meetings with your ATs. And there's a lot of different things that we do that take us away from some of those meetings. But personally, I always like being involved in film. I always like being involved in staff meetings, recruiting meetings, all those things that are very intricate in the way we do things. I like to be in the know, because it just further helps me do my job at a higher level to further support what we're trying to get done. Is it always perfect and that, you know, we can be at every meetings? No, but the ones we can be at, I like to be at.
Makes sense. Coach, in your opinion, what separates a great strength conditioning coach from a good one or a subpar one?
Oh, man, I'll tell you this. I think it's contextual, and it always comes down to fit. I think you could get a fantastic strength coach and put him in the wrong fit, or her in the wrong fit, and they could be a terrible strength coach. You could put the worst strength coach, quote unquote, right, or whatever the case may be, however you validate it. A subpar strength coach, or let's call it an inexperienced strength coach, put them in an environment that's fitting for them, and they'll be the best strength coach in the entire country, right? So our job is strictly related and predicated on the ability to understand and navigate a coaching staff. And it doesn't matter how great you are at the X's and O's, how great you are at relationships with the kids. It just comes down to your ability to fit within a system. And so I wouldn't say I could necessarily sit here and give you, you know, A, B, and C of what makes a great strength coach versus a quote-unquote subpar strength coach. But I'll tell you what it really means and what it really comes down to is an ability to understand and fit within a staff. Probably not the most you know, click-worthy answer you could get probably, right? But I genuinely feel it and believe it, man. I think it's really all about fit. I've seen guys that I know are fantastic strength coaches just from, you know, my own personal lens of what a great strength coach is, and have rough times in a position because of the lack of fit. And it's not a knock on a head coach. It's not a knock on a coaching staff or a system. It's just, it is what it is, right? And then I've seen other strength coaches that have gotten positions where you're like, oh, that's interesting. And they just knock it out of the park because they're put in a position to where they can be themselves. And the athletes appreciate them, and they do what's best for the athlete at all time. I take back my answer, right? I'll give you the common denominator between anybody who would evaluate them in any sort of lens would agree upon. The common denominator between anybody who would be dubbed a fantastic or great strength coach is they genuinely, unconditionally care about the welfare of the kid. That's it. Personal ego aside, training aside, whatever you may have else, other variable you could throw in there aside, they genuinely want and do what's best for the kid's well-being. That's a great strength coach in my mind. The rest of it, it's here or there. It could go either way. Between the training methods, between the social media, between the buy-in or the whatever from the coach. Like, if you do and genuinely care about the student athletes you work with, you're a great strength coach in my book.
No, I mean, that's really the same as the basketball side of it, so that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Coach, simple question. Why North Texas?
Because it's the right fit. Right? Like, it was an opportunity where I felt like I could be the best me. And I believe in what they're trying to build here, or rather continuing to build here. The coaching staff, phenomenal. The support from the strength side, phenomenal. The location and the buy-in from the community, phenomenal. But all that aside, I genuinely, through the conversations that I've had leading up to my decision to come here, felt like this was the perfect fit for me. And we see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, not only within the basketball and the strength and conditioning side of things, but from a personal standpoint, we see eye to eye. And that's no knock on the people that are at Iona, right? Like Tobin Anderson, I think he is a phenomenal person, phenomenal coach. And, you know, I love that staff and I love what they're about to do there as well. But it's contextual, man, and it's situational as well. Like, this is where I need to be, when I need to be there, at the very time I need to be here.
I love it. I love it. Coach, you've heard the podcast before. We come to this segment I call Start, Bench, Cut. Give you three things. You start one, bench one, and cut one.
Yep.
Nike, Adidas, Under Armour.
Oh, all right. This is easy, bro. This is an easy one for me. I'm going to knock this out the park. Start, bench, cut. Start in Nike. We're going to bench Under Armour because the shirts, the dry fit, and the shorts on par. And that's going to leave us to cut Adidas, man. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you the exact reason why. Because I've been at two Adidas schools The Adidas gear at both those schools are drastically different. I don't know why. And please, please, please don't send someone after me if you're an Adidas rep or whatever listening to this. But like, Adidas doesn't have the same kind of gear for every school across the board. Like, there's tiers to that stuff. Like, would you see Kansas rocking in Adidas gear? They're Adidas, right? Kansas. Yeah, that's not the stuff you're seeing at different places that have Adidas. Like, but Nike is relatively similar, if not identical, across the board. And people complain about the Under Armour shoes, but like, it is what it is. Like, I'm not picky on the shoes. I'm a really big fan of like the dry stuff, the dry fit stuff. But Adidas, like, yo, you gotta be better at making that thing like just general across the board, and I'll put you in that lineup. But I just don't feel comfortable doing it yet, man. Like, you guys got a lot of work to do when it comes to just making sure that everything is uniform across the board. No pun intended.
No, I love the logic behind that, coach. Definitely, now you put some thought into that one. I like that.
But you feel me though, right? Like, you see, like,
absolutely.
You've seen a really nice Adidas gear or Adidas get up or whatever. You're like, yo, that's pretty nice. And then you've seen something, you're like, what is that? It's like losing its color and stuff. I don't know, man. Maybe that's just me, but you never run into that with Nike. You get a Nike shirt, you know that's high quality, and you know it's going to keep its logos and the thing's not going to fall off of it. It's going to be nice for a little while now.
No doubt. All right, hot tub, cold tub, cryogenic chamber.
Cold tub. 100%.
So you're starting cold tub.
Oh, I got to start one bench one. All right. Cold tub, I'm going to start because it's an easy fix everywhere you go. Like, it takes no effort to just throw some water and some ice in there. You can make it in the hotel. You got a cold tub anywhere you go, right? So that's just the universal starter. That's just an easy one. It's simple. It's effective. Cryo second, because like I told you, I'm a nerd and there's a lot of science and research that backs the cryo stuff. And I'm a cut the hot tub just because I think people spend way too much time in it and they don't really know what they're doing. It just feels good. And I'm not really buying in on it, man. I'm really not buying in on it. I think it's more of a luxury thing than a performance beneficial thing. Now, I'm sure I'll get somebody who'll reach out to me and argue it, and that's cool. I'd like to learn. So if you got something that you know that I don't, which you probably do, because I don't know everything, you know, I'm more than down to have open ears about the hot tub argument.
Cookout, Bojangles, Raising Cane's.
Whew, this is hard for me, man. I don't have enough experience with all of them. I will say this. All right, quick story, and I'll tell you why I start Cookout. Cookout's a starter for me. When I went to Clemson, there was an assistant strength coach there. Great guy. Awesome, awesome guy. We're still friends to this day. He took one look at me up and down. I was like, man, what you weigh at? And I'm like, I don't know, probably like 160 pounds. He's like, dude, you're too little, man. You got to put some weight on. I said, what? He's like, yeah, you got to put a little bit of weight on you, man. I'm like, how much weight are we talking? He's like, you need to be like 185 by the end of the summer. Like, I bet you can't do it. I said, you bet me what? He's like, I bet you lunch or dinner or whatever it was at the time. He's like, I bet you can't do it. I'm like, all right, watch this. So in the 3 month span, I got there. Dang it if I didn't get there. I got there. But Cookout was the reason why. Because I spent three times a day at Cookout on an internship budget getting bulky as heck off of Cookout. So that earns my starting spot. What was the other two? Bojangles and Raising Cane's?
Yep.
Bojangles. I'm going to put that on my bench. Just a personal fan, and I've had good experience with it when I get it for the guys sometimes, so they like that. Raising Cane's, you're going to get cut just because I just don't have enough experience with you, man. I think maybe, I don't know, there might be one right down the road now that I'm thinking about it. Maybe I'll have to dabble a little bit and find out what it's really about, but that's my lineup right there.
Yeah, my first experience there was in Lubbock, so now they got plenty of them in Texas.
Yeah, there we go. See, maybe we'll reconvene and I'll give you a real answer once I dabble a little bit.
Okay, pre-workout, protein shakes, amino acids.
All right, you gotta understand, this is for me personally. I'm taking it for my own personal preference. Pre-workout, I'm starting just because I love my caffeine and it's got beta-alanine in it, and that little scratch sensation gets me going a little bit during my training sessions. Protein shakes is an obvious one. You know, that's a close starter, but that's going to have to go on my bench. I prefer to get my protein through eating a well-balanced diet. My fiance is a dietitian, so she's going to be real proud of that answer. So I get my nutrients through there. And amino acids, I just never been a big user. You know, I know a lot of people that really believe in them. I'm just not one who's really ever dabbled, so it's getting cut.
All right, last one. RDLs, dips, planks.
RDLs is definitely a starter. If you've been an athlete of mine and you're listening to this, you're gonna be like, shocker. I love the RDL. We use the heck out of them. I think they're fantastic. Especially like, you know, we alluded to earlier, you know, the guys, you know, start dealing with lower back pain. Well, I load the hell out of it in the off season. We load the posterior chain to make sure that lower back pain doesn't come back during the season. What better way to do it than loading up the RDL? Planks, definitely second. It was close. It was close. We're going to bench it. It was close to starter. We load the heck out of them too. I think it's more of a mental toughness thing than anything else. And, you know, if somebody hates it, chances are I'm going to run with it because I like making you do things you're uncomfortable with. So people are like, oh, planks. I'm like, yes. Well, you shouldn't have said that because now we're going to do planks. We're going to do a whole lot of them too. People usually do that with pull-ups too. So you can ask another athlete that I've had. They'll probably tell you, dude, we do pull-ups all the time. It's like, yeah, because you guys tell me you hate it. So you hate it for a reason. Let's expose it, right? Dips, we're gonna cut dips, but it's close because you know everybody loves a good pump from a dip.
Definitely. Coach, who are three guests I should have on the podcast? And they can be athletic training, they can be support staff, strength and conditioning, athletes, other coaches you've worked for. I feel like you have a diverse network of people you'd recommend.
I think somebody you need to have on, and this is selfishly speaking, but if you want great content, Ryan Horn is the best of the best. And he gives you great content on the basketball side. He gives you great content on the personal side. He gives you great content on the just you name it, he's going to knock it out of the park. I've never met somebody who's more well-rounded as a human being. So he's my number one. And that's from experience. So I definitely feel comfortable telling you that there's never a disappointing conversation when it comes to Ryan Horn. Secondly, I think, you know, any dietitian, I'll leave my personal biases out of this one, right? Now, obviously, I'm getting married to one, but just from a performance standpoint, they have great insight on a lot of the stuff that they deal with. Great information. They don't get enough credit for what they do on a day-to-day basis. They have tremendous experience when it comes to working with coaches because dietetics is something that's relatively new in sport. So they're still out there fighting for their spot and validation in their practice. So I think they're another great resource, and I'll let you pick your own. Like I said, I'll leave my bias out of this one. And then another specific individual to talk to. Have you talked to Coach Dooley? Dude, yeah, try to get him on there, bro. Yo, that would be a blast. You'll have a ton of fun, and everybody will love listening to him talk. Coach Dooley would be a blast to have on.
That's awesome. Coach, what advice would you give student athletes who want to get into your field?
If you're a student athlete, you're probably participating in strength and conditioning. So my biggest advice would be continue to question everything you do because a great strength coach will welcome your questions and curiosity. So continue to ask why we're doing what we're doing. Let them validate it, not because you don't trust them, but just because you're curious, and let that be known because they'll feel that. And even if you are questioning them, they'll be up for the task. I genuinely believe that a lot of the strength coaches out there that are working with student athletes today will genuinely enjoy some of those conversations. Get experience, not only being an athlete within the strength and conditioning program, but get experience as soon as you can being the strength coach themselves, because you'll be leaned upon heavily because you have experience that a lot of us, if not some more than some of us, don't have, and that's being a student athlete, right? Like, I was never a collegiate student athlete, and so I'm limited to my experiences. I only know what you're telling me, right? Like, you can actually draw upon experiences of being through it and what it feels like to lift after a practice, right? What it feels like to have patella tendinopathy and certain things like that, and what that does to your performance, and And I think you are the next generation and the greatest generation of strength coaches is being someone who's been in it. Like, those are some of my favorite strength coaches that are in it now to talk to, because they rely heavily on their experience as student athletes, from not only a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint, and what the tax and the schedule and the anxiety of excelling in not only sport but in education as well, and navigating some of those things. I think, you know, ultimately, if you remain curious and you have a passion for getting into it, continue to be questioning the norm, but also drive it forward, man. Like, be part of the process. Like, there's no reason that you need to wait until you're graduating to be part of it. Like, start experimenting with your own training. Start evaluating what the results of what you're doing now, and what some of the things you like and some of the things you don't like. Be a part of the process now, because it's only going to help you later.
I love that. Love that answer. Coach, if listeners want to get in touch with you, email, social media, what have you, what's the best way?
Social media wise, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I don't have a Facebook. Is that still a thing? I don't even know. I know I don't have one, so I don't even know if that's like professionally acceptable to be Facebook friends with anybody. I don't know. But just reach out, man. I don't even mind giving my phone number out. I'll give it to you. You obviously have it. You could throw it in a little bio or comment section or whatever. Email. My email is probably up on the UNT website by now. Email me. I'm an open book, and, you know, I love people. I love building relationships. I'm always open to connect.
Coach, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast, my friend.
No, man, thank you. You know, I've been dying to do it with you, man, and I'm glad we finally found the time.